Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com worldwide, and my guest, Patricia Carey, is the CEO of the Adoption Authority of Ireland. And I'll give this one a shot. Anyway, that Údaráis Uachtaráin na hÉireann. And so if there's anything wrong with that, I'd appreciate, Patricia, as we welcome you to the program. Don't show me up. How are you?
Gurmagat, and I think you got the Irish there as perfect as I would. I'm not a native speaker, so lovely, absolutely lovely to talk to you and your listeners today, and really delighted and welcome the opportunity to talk about this legislation and what it means for Irish people all over the world.
Now, this was enacted on July 1st of this year. Can you tell us about the process of, well, this after, 70 years, had been somehow skirted by various governments. So how did it come about this time?
So you're right. I mean, it's like we need to go back to 1953 and before to look at the history of adoption in Ireland. 1953 was the first time that adoption was legalized with the Adoption Act in 1953. And since then, we've had probably upwards of 70,000 adopted people. Also, before 1953, probably about 20,000 people who were what we call boarded out, which was like a quasi-fostering arrangement in Ireland. And as you and your listeners know, many Irish children who were born in Ireland but sent abroad, particularly to the United States, and then adopted in the United States. So how this came about was, I think, the first information and tracing adoption legislation was first mooted in the 1980s with Barry Desmond, Lord rest him, and we now come to pass to 2022 when, for the first time, legislation was enacted, signed by the President Higgins, that people are entitled to all of the information that the state holds about them. Their birth, their early life information, very critically medical information, and their original birth certificate. So for your listeners who don't know, somebody who's adopted, when they're born, they have a birth certificate in their birth parents, their family of origin's name, birth mother, birth father, if available. And then when they're adopted, they almost get a second birth certificate, which is an adoption certificate. So those original birth certificates have not been accessible up to now, only in certain circumstances. And I think to answer the question, how did this come about? It was about the balancing of the rights of all individuals. So balancing the right of privacy of birth parents and then really looking at the rights to information. And we know through international best standards and laws that people are entitled to information that is held about themselves. So for the first time from October, people will be able to apply to the Adoption Authority. We have a specific website, and I'll give you those details at the end, to apply for any and all information that the Irish state holds about people. And it's really important because we know lots of people left Ireland, maybe with not the best memories, and lots of people living in the United States, Canada, Australia, and the UK, so we really want them to hear about this new legislation and what it means for them.
Worldwide. Now, I wanted to tackle, before we get into details, what immediately would come to mind might be, okay, so where and how is confidentiality, how is that been protected, or is it protected?
So in terms of confidentiality, you may be referring there to, I suppose, birth parents and their confidentiality. So we established a register. We actually established a register in 2005. And with the new legislation, so we have 17,000 people who are on the register who are adopted or boarded out who want to maybe share information or meet or receive information. And of that 17,000, about 120 have said, I don't want contact with my adult adopted child, with my, you know, a birth parent, yeah, saying, I don't want contact, I don't want to meet them, I really don't want to go there. And, you know, there's a whole range of reasons. So for those small number of people, we will still be releasing the information. And I think this is an important point, because it frustrated people for years that they weren't able to get their information. We will release the information to the adoptee, but we will tell them that their birth mother or birth family do not wish to have contact, and, you know, just ask them to respect that. There's no reason why adopted people would have a lesser understanding of rights to privacy, sure, or confidentiality than the general public. So the government have really, I suppose, looked to the future and said, you know, people have the right to information about themselves. Somebody said to me recently, you know, if you go into a supermarket to buy a fillet steak, it'll have on the packaging where it originated from and, mm-hmm, you know, where the origin of the product was. But yet for adopted people, they were not entitled to the information about, you know, fundamentals of their birth, their early life, their medical information, and really, you know, about who they are for a lot of people. So we're balancing the rights between a small number of people who want privacy or no contact, and then the rights of the vast majority who want their information. And then another group of people will also be establishing a tracing service in October for people who want to maybe trace and meet or share information with their families. Not everyone will want that. We estimate that everyone will want their information. That will be the first thing that people will look for. And then some people will certainly be interested in a tracing service.
Mm. Okay. You have spoken specifically about adoptees. What about family members of adoptees and or nosy neighbors who might think they're providing
a
service?
Well, actually, the legislation covers relatives of persons affected of you know, birth parents and of adoptees. So if you can prove that you're a relative of one of the people affected by this legislation, you most likely will receive the information. So that's not a difficulty. But if some random person says, I think my next door neighbour gave up a child for adoption,
right,
or somebody, you know, somebody spuriously is trying, and we, you know, we've had that occasionally before, somebody trying to impersonate somebody else, and it's a reason why we look for identification, you know, some form of identification to say you are who you say you are. I know that can be frustrating for people,
mm-hmm,
because you have to provide that ID. But the website that we've built, it's called birthinfo.ie. It's specifically and only about this legislation. Now, since the 1st of July, we've had 1,700 people register through that website. And actually, we were concerned that we'd have people maybe with digital poverty or maybe not able to log on. We've actually only had 10 hard copies of registration. So, mm-hmm, so that's really, you know, in Ireland, as you know, like there's problems with Wi-Fi and there's problems with access to digital devices. But 1,600 registrants minus 10 who came in by post. So we're really positive about that. And we've had, of those, about 4% coming from the United States and about 8% from the United Kingdom. So we really want to push that number up, because we know a huge number of birth parents and adoptees now reside in the United States, and they are entitled to any information that's held about them.
Okay. Birth parents definition, how does that versus or in conjunction with adoptees? Birth parents meaning the father or the mother, or am I reading that wrong?
Yeah, no, that's a correct reading of it. I mean, unfortunately, on most of the birth certs, particularly those going back historically to the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even 70s, there was a notable absence of birth fathers. Somebody often said, you know, like all these babies were born and there was no fathers named on any of the yeah. documentation. And, you know, unfortunately, in some instances, the birth fathers may not have even known that their partner, wife, right. girlfriend was having a baby. So there is a much lesser record or registration of birth fathers, but where that information is held by the state, that will be given as well to the adult adoptees.
Perhaps carrying on negative questions first, let's say that the father has, as you mentioned there, doesn't know or chooses not to know. What are the legal ramifications in terms of seeking child support, compensation of some kind?
Yeah. Well, I suppose to start off with the legal premise that once somebody is adopted, their legal relationship ceases with their family of origin. So an adoptee has no rights to, it sunders the relationship with their family of origin. Okay. So they're legally not related to them. So there wouldn't be a situation where, and that has come up in the past, where birth parents might say to me, oh God, you know, maybe they'll become looking for me for my money. Well, they have no entitlement under the Irish legislation for that. The only situation where that becomes complicated, and we have had a situation recently in Ireland where there was a group of people and what we call illegal birth registration. So where an adoption did not take place, and I suppose to characterize it, their adoptive parents registered the child as their own. So this came to light in 2018 where it was characterized as adopted from birth, but there actually was no adoption that took place. So that cohort of people, unfortunately, were never adopted.
Yeah.
There was an illegal registration of their birth. So that very small group may have a claim on their birth family's estate, so to speak, because the relationship wasn't sundered. But it's a very bespoke and unusual situation. For the vast majority of people who were fostered or boarded out or adopted, that their legal relationship and family is with their adoptive family.
I'm old enough to remember that there were I don't know whether it was a goodly number or not, of those who were, and I assume this is covered under the boarding out, that were, they wound up being adopted, and I'm wondering whether it was legally or not, in overcrowded orphanage might lend, supposedly anyway, lend somebody to be not an indentured servant, but might
yeah,
be sent
yeah.
out.
I know exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
To work on a farm. That was unfortunately a huge cohort before 1953, before adoption was legalized, and it happened in the, you know, at the foundation of the state, the 20s, 30s, mm-hmm. and 40s, and, you know, some of those people are deceased, but many of them are still living. Some of them did go on to be adopted by the families that they were placed with, to use that term.
Yeah.
But some of them, I'm not going to dress it up, they had a terrible, terrible, early life, and they were treated appallingly. But again, I suppose this is part of the state trying to support them in giving them all information that's held about them. So there may be just really small pieces of information about yeah. where they were born, where they were for the first few months of their life. You know, did anyone visit them? And it may offer some small comfort, obviously, in later years for these people, that they have that information. Because up to now, as you're aware, the information was withheld or redacted when they receive it, but it was blacked out if it identified anyone else.
My guest friends, Patricia Carey, CEO of the Adoption Authority of Ireland. And Patricia, I'd like to ask you about perhaps not in any particular order, but would there be a goodly number of people who really want to have access to their medical records and the story that's it? I want to get further involved.
I mean, I think to use that term now that's bandied about, it's a bit of a journey for people. I would say absolutely most adopted people will say, I want the information you hold about me. And any of us would say, any medical information, I want to be aware of it. It is a smaller group of people who decide to go on and trace, who want to have maybe, you know, meet people. I would say the vast majority in the 90 percentile wants their information, and you know, maybe 50-60% might consider tracing at some level. What we're finding now, which is really interesting, is that a lot of the work we're doing is not around birth parents reunion, it's around siblings and half siblings.
Yes.
So where a woman had a child, relinquished it for adoption, went on, got married, had three or four other children, her adopted adult child wants to meet their half siblings,
yes,
you know, and it, they may be the only siblings they have if they grew up as an only child. So that's a significant amount of the work that we do now. Also, unfortunately, what the trends now are that a lot of women, you know, unfortunately gave up more than one child for adoption. So
yeah,
you have full siblings who didn't grow up together. Because again, the practice in Ireland in the 50s, 60s and 70s was not to place adopted siblings together, it was to separate them. So that's a, another sad legacy, that you could have,
yes,
adopted siblings meeting for the first time when they're 30, 40, 50 or 60. So we're doing a lot of work around that, particularly maybe where birth mothers are deceased and people want to meet. And they want to meet people that they're blood relatives of. For some adopted people, it may be the first time that they're meeting somebody who they're actually, you know, related to biologically.
Yes. Now, getting back to a fact that you mentioned earlier with respect to fathers who may not know that indeed they are fathers. And if they don't know, they wouldn't be expected to, you know, confide or even, you know, discuss that. What is the level of acceptance, say, by somebody who would reach out now under the new legislation and say, by the way, you know, you may not know this, but you're my father.
Well, there's a few things I'd say around that. Sometimes it's presented in popular media that there's this, you know, doorstepping, that adoptees are somehow going to turn up on someone's doorstep and say, I'm your long lost son or daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm CEO here 8 years. I've never, ever heard of that happening. You do hear people maybe writing a letter or contacting through Facebook. So that's the first thing. I think, you know, generally, and I've spoken to some birth fathers about this, they generally have a good idea that there was something, you know, they say,
okay,
yeah, I did think that, but I wasn't 100% sure, and I walked away from the situation, or, our, you know, if they were younger people, their parents separated them, and maybe, you know, that's why I'm talking to you today, maybe the birth mother was sent to the States or to the UK. So, you know, sometimes people can be a bit suspicious and they may need a little bit of documentary evidence. We don't do it ourselves, but sometimes people independently decide to do DNA to confirm that, you know, they are actually related and the nature of their relationship. I would say, you know, 99 times out of 100, a birth father will have some good sense that he is a birth father, without putting too fine a point on it. I mean, where there can be disappointment, and obviously this is why we're very keen to reach as many people as possible, is where, unfortunately, birth parents are deceased, and there isn't that link down back for the adopted person.
Now, for those who either have a high sense of curiosity or suspect that they have, say, siblings, that they have other relatives, uncles, aunts, is there a process where a particular order, if are you on the front burner if you are a brother or sister, and how is that determination made? If there is an uncle, perhaps.
So, So the way we're going to work it is, and there's different applications for different levels of service. So there's really kind of three things at the moment. We're asking people to register on this contact register, and that they give us as much information as they want, as they can, as a birth parent or as an adopted person or boarded out. And they may indicate that they want to share letters, photographs, they may want to have a phone call, or they may be interested in meeting. So that's step one. And then people may apply. They say, I actually want you to go and look for my birth mother. And we call that a tracing service. They also might say that they want to look for any siblings or half-siblings. So we will work with each person to trace as many and as many people that they wish to trace. What sometimes happens is that a birth parent is deceased, and they might say, well, are there any other relatives? And we might say, well look, there might be an aunt or an uncle. So it's almost conversational. Most people, their first port of call will be birth parents, followed by birth siblings or half siblings, and then into the wider family group that may exist or may not exist, as the case may be.
Okay.
So we've become quite adept at you would almost say like detectives or genealogists. Finding people in Ireland, and you know yourself, Ireland is a small place, and you might think that Mary Murphy from Galway could never be found, but we've ways of getting in touch with people discreetly.
Okay, if somebody is entitled to the information with respect from whence they came, at what point and who becomes the referee, as it were, in, say, contacting the mother, the birth mother or birth father? What would the rough percentage be of those who say, fine, now we're giving you the information, but where does that information level stop? Do you say, here's the address, here's the telephone number, who's going to make that initial contact and say, by the way, for the birth mother, who in many cases may not have shared that information with, the husband, the partner, and that would put the hair standing on the necks of some people who say, oh, geez, I don't need this, you know?
Yeah. It's a really good point. I mean, I would go back to the earlier conversation or question. Out of the 1,700 people we have on this register, we've about 150 people who've said they want no contact. And really important to note there that sometimes those people change their mind. Mm. They might come to us and say, look, I've actually spoken to a priest or a doctor or my friend, and I wouldn't mind sending a letter to my adopted adult child or sending a photograph. I'm not ready to meet. So to answer the question, when we release the information to the adoptee, it will be information that that happened at the time. So it could be 30, 40, 50 years mm-hmm. old. So most likely it's not going to have contemporary phone numbers, yes. addresses, mm-hmm. email addresses, all of that. And we're very clearly separating the provision of information with the provision of tracing and contact. And the tracing and contact would be through social workers in the adoption authority or in the child and family agency. And I suppose that goes back to your point where you were saying, like, if somebody knows exactly where someone lives, I've never heard of somebody literally going up and knocking on the door, and you wouldn't want yeah. people to feel that would happen. We would encourage people, we'd say, look, we have an address for your birth mother, but it's 40 years old. And the person might say, well, look, I'm still interested in tracing her. Right. And we'll do a little bit of work, discreetly make contact. It may be sending a letter on, not on headed paper, but right. very, you know, saying, Mary, you know, this is a friend of yours. We met 40 years ago. Clearly the birth mother will know what it's about. I'd love to talk to you about 1967. She's going to know immediately. Yes. Give us a buzz at this number.
Right.
So it would be a very discreet, measured contact. And then maybe we would meet the birth mother and explain that her, you know, son or daughter would like to meet. And that could happen very gradually, maybe through sharing letters or having a phone call. And in some instances, people will meet and take it from there.
My guest friends, Patricia Carey, who is CEO of the Adoption Authority of Ireland. Patricia, I want to ask you about something that is fairly common, particularly, I think, in rural Ireland, where very large families may have, had children where they could no longer perhaps either disability or the death of father or mother, and voluntarily sent their some of their children or one or more of their children to an aunt, to an uncle, to somebody who had either no children or were willing to take on.
So, yeah, I mean, it was quite common, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there, that particularly in rural Ireland, children moved around within families, maybe to use that general term. And in some instances, those children grew up thinking they were the child of the aunt or the extended relative. A lot of those those arrangements were not documented or even, you know, nobody would have been aware of them outside the state. But where in a small number of instances, maybe they went on to regularise those if there was an adoption or there was some form of paperwork around it. As I said, at the top of our conversation, any information that the state now holds on people can be given to them as part of this new legislation.
It is terrific. It's really great news and very significant news that this avenue has finally opened. Just want to ask you, in the reverse, are there some children or adults in Ireland that may have been adopted into Ireland from other countries, and what kind of records exist on those?
Great, yeah, great question. And actually, this legislation does cover what we call inter-country adoption. Ireland actually has a very significant number, over probably 10,000 children adopted from abroad into Ireland. So it does cover those children. Now, most of those children came to Ireland more recently, so from the 80s and 90s onwards. So ironically, the parents, the adoptive parents, would have a lot of the information when they went to the country, be it Russia, Ethiopia, you know, China, Vietnam, the Philippines. But as the state agency responsible for adoption, we also have relationships with our equivalent in those countries, so we can link in with, you know, the state agency in Vietnam or in the Philippines, and any information that might be held now on the birth parents, we can work with those young people once they're over 16 to gather that information. And we're planning to develop a service for those young people over the coming years. A lot of them would be still, you know, children under 16. Some of them wouldn't. I mean, there was a significant number of children adopted from Romania in the 90s, just after the fall of the Ceausescu regime. And those young people are now moving into adulthood or are adults. And again, you know, any assistance we can give those people, we can contact the adoption agencies in Romania. I mean, I'm always pointing out to people that, you know, information in some instances might be scant or may not exist in as much form as we would like, but any information that we can gather and any information that we can give to people, we are committed to doing so. And this new legislation, which is landmark, opens that possibility for people to get all the information about themselves.
That is terrific. And, you know, we think it's a big deal. And it is, and it will be for
greatness. It is. No, it's historic. It's very historic, and there's a lot of conversations in Ireland. I think we said when we started the conversation, you know, that every family in Ireland in some way is touched by adoption, and I think that includes every Irish person living abroad in some way is touched by adoption. So I'm absolutely delighted to talk to you today and to reach out to your listeners, and would really encourage people to look at that website. It's birthinfo.ie, and there's questions and answers and all sorts of information on that. People can get more information, or they can contact the staff here at the Adoption Authority.
And I want to thank you for the information. You're doing terrific work. And
well, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And again, it's www.birthinfo.ie. My very welcome guest, Patricia Carey, CEO of Adoption Authority of Ireland. Thank you, Patricia. And friends, you're listening.
Thank you so much.
Okay, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA The Flannelly Show, irishradio.com worldwide.